This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
And most people don't have that kind of money to spend on an engineering analysis. So in effect, we're installing this huge fossil fuel guzzling heating system in all of our buildings instead of installing like hyper efficient technologies that reduce energy costs and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. That's the current state of the industry.
This week on Sea Change Radio, we continue to honor the contributions of African Americans to the environmental movement by revisiting discussions with two individuals who are making a difference in very different ways. First, we hear from the Reverend Leo Woodbury, who's building an interfaith coalition to fight climate change. Then we speak to Donnell Baird about his company Block Power, which helps green building efforts in communities of color and eases access to capital for minority-owned businesses. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Reverend Leo Woodbury. Reverend, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you. Glad to be here. Thank you for this awesome opportunity.
So, Reverend, you're the pastor at Kingdom Living Temple, which is a non-denomination church in Florence, South Carolina, correct?
That's correct.
Maybe you can give us a little perspective on the challenges that you face trying to bring people together. It seems like Dr. King's dream of bringing people together has been put on hold for the time being with the Trump administration. And I'm thinking most specifically, in your case, with people of faith. So maybe you can speak to how you're hoping to use the environment to bring people together.
And there's actually starting to be conversation with the evangelical church, based primarily as with other faith traditions on our spiritual and our scriptural beliefs. And so there's actually conversation that's beginning. Because from a faith perspective, every major religion has a creation story. And with that creation story, Adam or whoever the first man and or woman is asked to be a steward over the garden of the earth, to be fruitful and to multiply and replenish. This faith tradition actually puts forth the first recycling program when it talks about replenishing the earth. And so when we look, what we see is that on a high level with the faith community, we've already had people buy in. So in September 2014, while the People's Climate March was going on in New York City, I attended the World Council of Churches gathering where you had Buddhists, Hindu, Jews, Christians, I mean, probably about 15 different faith traditions signed a statement of faith that said, climate change is real. That was followed the next year by the encyclical by Pope Francis. And since then, we've had statements of faith from international Muslim and national Muslim organizations, Hebrew, Buddhist, the African and Methodist Episcopal Church at their quadrennial meeting has just adopted climate change and environmental justice as one of their international initiatives. And so we see that moving. And so actually what's happening now is we're starting to see the faith community becoming more involved, even on a national level. When you look at Green the Church, which is an African-American initiative led by Reverend Ambrose Campbell out in Oakland, California, or you're looking at Green Faith, or you're looking at interfaith power and light. So we're starting to move and mobilize the faith community. And if we can do that, including the evangelical church, we will have hundreds of millions of people who will be advocating for change and for dealing with the impacts of climate change and moving towards a clean, renewable future. And so I'm really hopeful because I can see movement, and I believe that we'll be able to make progress with some of our evangelical brothers and sisters when they realize that this is a moral call. This is a spiritual imperative for them as people of faith, and that they are called to care for the least among us, who are those who are most impacted by climate change and pollution, and they are called to be good stewards of the earth.
So you were instrumental in preventing a coal plant from being built in your community, correct?
Yes, Santee Cooper wanted to build a coal-fired plant to generate electricity in Florence County a few years back, and we were able to, pretty much along the lines of the Justice First tour, we were able to organize and mobilize people across different issue areas and class, as well as race and religion, and were able to eventually have them withdraw from building that plant in Florence County.
As you encounter people in communities that still have a lot of fossil fuel jobs, let's say if you go into West Virginia and work in coal country, what do you find is the best way to open in dialogue with people who are saying, don't take our jobs, we want to keep these coal jobs, regardless of what it might mean in the long term for our planet?
Well, you know, we would say to them, first of all, that despite the narrative that's coming out of the federal government, which is like a lot of narratives that come out of the federal government today, not based in reality nor facts, that when you look at what is happening in the energy industry, that right now solar and wind are creating more jobs and have more jobs currently than the coal and oil industry combined. And then also we want people to remember that while those were jobs that paid well and provided for families, we want them to remember the sacrifices that they caused. We want them to remember those dear ones that they laid to rest because of black lung and all these other illnesses that they got working in fossil fuel industries, so that they can have jobs in the clean energy industry without jeopardizing the lives of their loved ones. And that it's high time that we moved away from energy generation that is based on death and illness, that a industry that is literally based on a product that comes from dead dinosaurs interred in the ground, that is based on an energy industry that is based on coal that is interred in the ground like a grave, and instead that we move towards life-giving energy like the sun that gives life to everything on this planet, and the wind that spreads the seeds that we need for flora, fauna, and the food that we consume daily. And so the real and true narrative is that there are more jobs in the renewable energy industry today than there are in the fossil fuel industry. Those jobs are declining, and we want people to make a living, yes, by the sweat of their brow, but not at the cost of their health and lives.
Morning rain keeps on falling. Like the tears that fall from my eyes. As I sit in my room, staring.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to the Reverend Leo Woodbury. He's the pastor of Kingdom Living Temple, a non-denomination church in Florence, South Carolina. As somebody who works in the Deep South with communities of color for years, So I'm interested in getting your opinion on whether it's important to try to bring people together no matter how far apart they may seem, or is polarization simply a fact we have to work with in today's toxic political climate, Reverend?
I think that in the long term, as well as in the immediate, that the best approach is always to bring people together. And that a short-term view just looks at a few years. But if you look at what we were able to do with the Equal Rights Amendment and the women's movement, when you look at what we were able to do with the civil rights movement and student movements and other movements across America, we were able to bring together people who were deeply polarized, deeply and violently also oftentimes opposed to one another. And so you look at what happened in 1965 and 1968, and then all you have to do is go forward 20 years. And from 1965 to 1985, America had been completely and totally changed. Not saying that we had resolved all of our racial issues, but how our country looked was markedly changed. And so I'm a firm believer that we can do the same thing in 10 or 20 years, but we can only do that by having all the stakeholders at the table. We need to make it profitable and make it feasible for utilities and co-ops who are already, despite the narrative coming out of Washington, D.C., building solar farms, building wind farms, because they don't want to lose their share of the energy market. You know, the crucial piece about this is meeting people where they are. And I talk about this a lot of times when we talk about organizing. You don't meet people where you are, you meet people where they are. And so if the motivation for some people is how do I get a job? Well, renewables can answer that. If where they are is how do I lower my energy bill, then renewables can be an answer to that. If they want to know how do I avoid the disastrous impacts of climate change, how do I minimize that after having been the victim of a flood, then dealing with forest issues deal with that. When they say, how can my voice be heard? And we're talking about environmental justice rights, than what we're proposing about having an environmental bill of rights, people looking at that and seeing if we can have voter referendums to have that attached to state constitutions. That's how we do that. But it takes everyone at the table to make permanent and large scale change. And so I can understand folks wondering about how, you know, we respond in the immediate in terms of, you know, voting in 2018, 2020, and we're looking at those issues. But long term, we need to be as inclusive as we possibly can, because people need to realize this. Donald Trump is not the problem. He's the tip of the iceberg. And the people who are financing him, the people who are supporting him by voting, the people who are supporting him in the media, are still going to be there unless we can change the hearts and minds of people so that they no longer see those sorts of policies as viable and productive for America and the world's future.
Do you think it's fair to draw the parallel between the Vietnam War, which activated people who weren't politically active in the American consciousness? It was kind of a shot across the bow, which led to a bigger tent, which helped the women's movement and civil rights movement evolve into what it became within a decade. Do you think it's fair to say that something so divisive like the Vietnam War actually brought people together, and we could maybe look at the election of President Trump in a similar light?
Absolutely. He wanted to unify the country, and he has unified the country. There have literally been millions of people marching across America in roughly the last 14 months. And so if people look at that awesome phenomena, which we could not have envisioned 2 years ago. And rather than looking at a dismal future, that actually encourages people. And your reference to the Vietnam War, the Stop the War movement, is definitely a good model of what we're working towards in the South with the Justice First Tour, because the people involved with the Stop the War movement, the Vietnam War, people were there because they were communists, because they were progressive, because they were pacifists, because they could not support the war from a spiritual perspective. You had people like Muhammad Ali, who for racial reasons said they did not believe that a black man should fight a yellow man for the white man. You had students who were protesting against the draft. So you had a whole range of people, once again, across issue areas, different races, et cetera. And what I really believe is that the people in this country are ready for that.
Reverend Leo Woodbury, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much for the amazing opportunity, Alex.
Well, the children have a hard time when the
mother's gone.
Oh, she's gone on home.
When the mother's gone.
Well, the children have a hard time
when the mother's gone.
They gone on home.
When the mother's gone.
Well, the children.
All time.
All of that a weekend.
All that crying.
Well, the children have a
hard time
when the mother's gone.
When the mother's gone.
Oh, she's gone on home.
When the mother's gone.
People say, sister will do when
the mother's gone.
Oh, gone on home.
When the mother's gone.
Some people say sister will do when
the mother's gone.
Oh, gone on home.
When the mother's gone.
People say
sister will do.
She'll get married
and turn her back on you.
Well, the children have a
hard time
when the mother's gone.
When the mother's gone.
Oh, the mother's gone.
When the mother's gone.
I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Donnell Baird. He's the founder and CEO of Block Power. Donnell, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Super excited to be here. Thanks for having us.
So explain in a nutshell what Block Power's model is.
We are trying to use cutting-edge technology that is disrupting and innovating industries like Uber or Airbnb. We're trying to bring that cutting edge software and technology to the business of greening buildings in low and moderate income American communities. And so we're using software and hardware and connected devices and smart sensors and machine learning to help us green buildings at scale.
And give us an example of Block Power in action. How has it helped some of your clients?
Absolutely. So we're working with the mayor of the city of New York to green 500 to 1,000 buildings in Brooklyn and Queens. And these buildings are in low and moderate income communities across Brooklyn and Queens. Some of these neighborhoods are experiencing rapid gentrification. And we know that when we green a building, not only are we reducing the greenhouse gas emissions, but we're also reducing the energy costs and consumption of that building. And so we actually can increase the profitability of buildings, enabling some building owners to kind of maintain a property as affordable housing or with having reasonable rent for people that have been in the neighborhood for decades so that they don't have to move. Specifically, lots of our clients come to us. They need to replace their boiler that supplies heat into their heating system of their building. And these boilers, sometimes they burn filthy, oil that has a lot of particulate matter. Sometimes they burn clean oil, for what that's worth. Sometimes they burn natural gas. In the best of situations, they are powered by solar panels, right? Solar hot water heating systems. And so we work with clients to properly size and replace their heating systems in order to ensure that they're operating at maximum energy efficiency, which generates savings to the client in terms of a reduced energy bill and reduces greenhouse gas emissions.
When you're saying clients in a boiler situation, would that be the homeowner themselves, or would that be an intermediary?
Well, it depends on what kind of building. So a lot of our clients are churches or synagogues, right? Some of our clients are small businesses who own their building or lease their building. Could be nonprofits, community centers. Also multifamily housing complexes. Those are a huge number of our clients where you have a property owner who owns a building that may have, you know, 5 units or 10 units or 70 units. And they're trying to figure out how to manage this building to keep their tenants comfortable, to make sure that the building's profitable, to make sure that the air that's circulating throughout the building isn't causing, you know, super high rates of asthma attacks. And, you know, learning to figure out how to lower their operating costs where they can. And so any one of those building owners is a client. And so we work with them to figure out the way to make their building healthier, smarter, and greener.
And sticking to the boiler example, how would somebody have gotten this information before Block Power's technology? And maybe explain how, if you can kind of get into the weeds, how the application would actually give them the information without them being a super techie.
Absolutely, absolutely. So the problem is this industry is a mess, right? And for those of us who believe in climate change and don't think that it's a hoax invented by the Chinese, we have to solve the business problems associated with, you know, the nitty-gritty of like replacing a boiler or replacing a heating system or installing a high efficiency HVAC unit. Because that is where a ton of greenhouse gas emissions come from. 68% of greenhouse gas in New York City comes from buildings, right? And so figuring out how to do the nitty-gritty of making those buildings greener and more efficient is incredibly important. So specifically with a boiler, for example, what people do now is they don't properly maintain the boiler because it's in the basement, it's gross, it's expensive, it's hard to understand. And basically when the boiler breaks or stops working, they call a local contractor, and the contractor comes over and says, it's, you know, probably going to cost me $200,000 to replace this boiler, and the law, local city building codes say that you have to provide a minimum heat to your tenants of 65 degrees. So in order to ensure that we can get your building up to 65 degree temperature, I'm going to put in a huge new boiler. Which, by the way, I'm going to charge you a ton of money for because it's bigger, and it's gonna take more work for me as a contractor to install it. So the contractor installs this huge boiler, which is going to overheat the building. He or she takes home a big fat paycheck, and the building owner is stuck with this large new boiler in the basement.
And the analysis of that can cost money as well, right? Just getting somebody to give
exactly.
You you don't get the free quote necessarily for something like this, correct?
Right. So the contractor walks in and they're going to get paid for installing a new boiler, right, to replace your old one. And a sophisticated building owner is actually going to hire an engineer to come in and analyze the building to figure out what the appropriate size of the replacement boiler should be. Or if you generally want to green your building to become more efficient, or you want solar panels, you need to have an engineer kind of visit your building and basically do a walkthrough of your building, catalog all of the equipment, and start to analyze the way that equipment is performing and how each individual piece of equipment's performance interacts with all the other equipment. And that's pretty expensive. And long and short of it, it can cost anywhere from $10,000 to $100,000 just to perform that engineering analysis. And that engineering analysis tells you what you need to do in order to make your building more efficient. And most people, you know, don't have that kind of money to spend on an engineering analysis. So in effect, we're installing this huge fossil fuel guzzling heating system in all of our buildings instead of installing like hyper efficient technologies that reduce energy costs and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. That's the current state of the industry.
So Block Power is essentially kind of cutting out that initial engineering cost.
And to that point, let me add another layer of complexity because now you got a $300,000 boiler replacement. You're a building owner in the middle of Detroit or in the middle of the Bronx. you got this $300,000 bill coming your way, and you may not have that cash on hand. If you don't turn the heat on, you're in violation of the law because you're not providing legally mandated heat to your tenants. It's actually hard to finance these boiler replacements as well, right? So if you're the building owner, you've got multiple challenges, and that the engineering's expensive, and it's hard for you to access financial services so that you can actually provide adequate heat to your building, right? If you need to replace the boiler. So you got those two problems. So what Block Power does is we think that the same way that mobile computing and big data are revolutionizing industry after industry across the American economy, that they should revolutionize the green buildings industry in low and moderate income communities. And so what we do is we show up, we install sensors, just like the sensors that sense touch and temperature inside your iPhone or Android. We buy these cheap sensors, we distribute them throughout the building, and we connect them through a local internet gateway that we install that's also pretty cheap. We put in a $50 credit card size computer into the boiler and into the basement where the boiler is located, and we start to collect data on temperature, pressure, humidity, and the way that heat is produced, transferred, and distributed throughout that building. By installing these sensors, we're able to perform the analysis using our software on the data that's being collected by the sensors. We can actually replace that engineering cost of $50,000 to $100,000, and you know, we can do it at $3,000 to $5,000, right? Perform that analysis that tells you what kind of hyper-efficient boiler you could replace your broken boiler with that's going to save you money on your energy bill and also reduce carbon emissions. And so that is how we solve the engineering problem that causes a lot of trouble in the retrofit industry. And then because we have a ton of data on your building, and because we've lowered the cost of performing engineering analysis, for the same amount of money that you would spend on one building, we can now analyze 20 buildings. And because we're analyzing 20 buildings, now we have a portfolio of buildings that we can take to a Wall Street investment bank like Goldman Sachs or Deutsche Bank. And they have their set of internal incentives for providing capital to invest in these green building projects in low and moderate income communities at a pretty decent interest rate. I mean, they've offered us capital at 5.5%, which is a pretty good rate. So now we're able to provide engineering analysis and capital at a decent interest rate to green buildings projects in low and moderate income communities. Does that make sense?
It does. The company is Block Power, and the founder is Donnell Baird. Donnell, thanks so much for being my guest on SeaChange Radio.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Samford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by the Brothers Johnson, Freddie King, and the Staples Singers. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.